Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Bryce Castillo, filling in for Andrew Main, joined, as always, by Brian Brushwood.
Hey, man.
And Justin Robert Young.
Hey!
Sharp.
It's great.
It's good.
It's great. We have an email in to the show today from David Potts. David Potts wrote into the show about 1 year ago. He writes, here's a question for After Things. Exactly 1 year ago, I wrote into After Things. You guys graciously read the email and gave me some fantastic advice. If you don't remember, he has a YouTube channel where he teaches or he plays covers of guitar songs.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
He's finding a balance between songs he knows well and songs that he does, or I'm sorry, songs that will do well, things like pop songs.
That's
songs
right.
That he loves, like classic rock. He says the advice that we gave him was super helpful. He's maintained a 2 to 3 video per week schedule and has seen his subscribers go from 17,000 1 year ago to 56,000, tripled.
Wow.
In the past year. So he has some new questions. The way that he's been monetizing his project is through PayPal donations. I'm assuming through a PayPal button or just a PayPal link. I now get a few dozen donations each month. This has been a solid stream of income. It has matched YouTube's AdSense almost one for one over the last 6 months, especially in the early part of this year, where AdSense numbers can be a little weaker. Early on, I responded to each donation with a manually written thank you email, but recently I've been totally underwater with these responses, and over the last few months, I've hardly sent any thank you responses at all. Straight up, I feel awful about this. I'd like to respond to each one, but I find myself frozen with indecision and uncertainty when it comes to how to make changes to my workflow. Last week, Brian mentioned what's urgent versus what's important. This quip really resonated with my dilemma here. For the past year, what's urgent has been the next video, prepping, recording, editing, and publishing, rinse and repeat. While I've been happy with how much this hustle has moved the needle, I don't feel great about the important things that have fallen to the wayside, i.e. responding to donations being the number one item here. So his questions are, to what extent is it my job to respond with thanks to all these donations? Should I not feel bad at all and just get over with it? Or should I draw the line and only respond to people who include a note or to people who donate more than a certain amount? We'll start with those. He's got some other stuff here, but we'll start with those.
Justin, I have thoughts, but I'd like to hear your take before I share them.
I in general, think that that kind of stuff is best. You need to understand how much you have a reservoir for it. And everybody that got a hand-sewn thank you back in the day is something that they should feel special about, because you are getting to a point where you can't hand sew all of your thank yous. And so that was a reward for people getting in early. I think you need to figure out a way that you're comfortable with expressing your thanks and warmth for anybody who gives you anything. But I do think that you are at the point where you need to cognitively reframe exactly how much you need to put into these kind of thank yous, because ultimately what is bringing you more of a connection with people is the work. And I think having a little script that is from the heart and understands what it is not a crime. You know, you are protecting your ability to continue to create the product that brought them into this in the first place. And you should not feel bad about it. But I do think that it's up to you to decide, hey, look, I'm not sending them anything. It'd be better if I sent them something quick and timely that just said, thank you. I'm an independent producer. You're going out of your way to make sure that your love came through monetary form, affects my life deeply. Thank you so much. Like, I think that's something that you do need to flip a switch on at some point.
So the worst case scenario or the best case scenario is every time somebody contributes or helps make your lifestyle possible, you, if you could, you would pick up the phone, you would dial their phone number. They would say, hello, it's Bryce. And I'm like, hi, Bryce, it's me, Brian, the person you're supporting. And you're like, holy cow. Yeah. Let's have a 20-minute authentic conversation. Great. Absent that, a note is, still better. Less better than all of that is a generic, you know, 3-minute video where it's like, hey, man, I don't know your name and I don't know who you are, but I want you to know you reached out and you've made this stuff possible. This is my child. Here's my dog. This is the Thunderbird I'm in the middle of rebuilding.
His guitar.
With my guitar and so on. These are all things that you virtualize that experience. The worst case of all of those is nothing. So if you find yourself in a position where you're doing nothing in response, then I would say look at the menu and literally do anything versus nothing as a thank you. So I would say right this minute, record a 30-second video that says, hey, or doesn't even have to be a video. Write it out. Write a paragraph saying, hey, a whole bunch of people signed up and I have not been able to individually thank each one of them. Copy paste, and just like do something matters more than nothing and by a big exactly. way.
So he goes on, is using a pre-canned thanks email template where I say insert the person's name a crappy thing to do? Is a 1-2 sentence sincere and canned response worse than not responding at all? My default behavior is to write 1-2 paragraphs, which feels the most genuine but doesn't scale.
I would say
it sounds like anything that you have the time to do.
Well, certainly that. But also, it seems to me like you also get away with – I'm going to use air quotes around get away. You get away with more when you acknowledge what you're up to. For example, like I continue in my quest to get back through my 2,000 important and unread emails. And then when I dip down to the 1600s or whatever, now all of a sudden – like that zone is back to October 2017. And at that point, I type out the phrase, finally got to this, copy paste. And that's how every email opens. And then maybe it's now that I've missed this opportunity, how did it work out for you? Or copy paste. You know, it's just like, you know, I saw that you were asking for advice. I know it's too late for me to do a thing, but you know, what can I do? So it's like some version of honesty, because I hope we live in a world where people don't expect to be entitled to 100% of your time. And they understand that any given day, there's only 2 to 3 hours that you're going to be able to real time respond. As long as you, as they say in advertising, address and dismiss it, where it's just like, this is where we're at. This is how much time I got. Today's your day, or wasn't your day until today. Now we're finally here. Mm-hmm. I feel like that does enough to make somebody feel validated and acknowledged as a human being, as long as they know that there's an actual connection between you know their thoughts and you as the person they support.
That is a great point. Think about it like this. Somebody goes and makes the decision after loving your content to give you money. If they immediately get something back that says, thank you, you don't know how much this means to a small creator like me. You have done a great job, and I hope that you're allowed to do it. That's a completed loop. Money went in. Gratitude came back. Was it as great as if you called them and said, hey, can we be best friends? Thank you for doing this. No, but it's at least a closed loop, and they get to know immediately that their thing made a difference, even if it's you saying that I really do care. It's a canned thing. And as culturally, I would say yes, it is less than what you did before. As a creator, it's not just important that you flip a switch and figure out how to clear your momentum and create a healthier, more scalable relationship with your audience. You need to do it now. You need to do it today, because it will eat into not only your ability to produce, but your relationship with your audience. Mm-hmm. And I've seen plenty of people in various different forms of I love, I tolerate, or I hate my audience. And oftentimes, there's somebody that we all know. Now it's got, I've unnecessarily made a mystery out of this, but that I've had a conversation that are like, I hate my audience. I don't like them. I don't like who they are. I don't like interacting with them. And it is really, 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 really frustrating. And what I would guess is that person, having known how much they do, they put a lot of effort into going back and forth. And they do a lot of effort into interacting with people that I think there could have been a decision made by them at an earlier point to make it healthier, make it a healthier way to do it.
Yeah. Well, and not only does it eat into your time to create stuff today, the guilt that you will feel flipping that switch today will be only get worse if you do it later down the line as things continue to grow. In a world where things continue to grow, it will only be harder to flip that switch to say, hey, I gotta make a change. You should do it now. It's when's the best time to plant a tree? 30 years ago.
Right.
The second best time is right now.
Right. And plus also, like, if you're a fan of the After Things podcast, then odds are you're trying to build your own empire. You're trying to create your own, you know, creative, independent, empire. The faster you become comfortable with the idea of virtualizing your presence and the fidelity with which you're able to make that happen, the better off you're going to be. If you let me put it this way. If you're somebody who says, no, everything has to be authentic in real time and whatever. It's like, that's a fine attitude to have. It severely limits you to an existence that is closer to being a 19th century artisan, you know, a horseshoe maker or whatever, a blacksmith. You know, those people only had one-to-one real interactions, real time or whatever. Maybe they would write some material. So even then, they would want to sound like they're speaking off the cuff, but really they've pre-written this material. They were just waiting for the right opportunity to bust it out on somebody. So once you get over that hump, and you say, how can I best virtualize my experience? As I think about it, my relationship with everybody who listens to my voice at this moment is that we have a very real, very strange, largely one-way friendship. And it is a real friendship because if you write me and you need help, I will do what I can to be there. Mm-hmm. It is a real friendship in that I tell the truth and I share authentic stories. Just like a real friend would be. The only thing that is uncommon about it is that it is asymmetrical. It's time asymmetrical. It's distance asymmetrical. It's awareness asymmetrical. And obviously, you know, like whoever it is that's listening to me right now, you know more about my daughters than I know about your daughters. And that's fine. Because no friendship is truly symmetrical. So once you embrace that, think to yourself, how can I best increase that fidelity of presence to make as many of the wonderful people who make it possible for me to do what I love for a living and make them have the most fulfilling experience in this beautiful, strange, one-way friendship that we have?
So I have two sort of suggestions, I think, that David can work. And he mentions one of them that I talked about last week, which was turning off push notifications and setting its dedicated time to respond to stuff. I think that's especially if you feel like you have issues controlling your time, I think that's something that could be helpful. But I think another thing is if you feel funny about using a template, or if you don't want to use a form, or you don't want to do a mail merge or something like that, I almost think that something that you could do is write out a thank you note, write it out, print it out, put it next to your computer. And when you want to write someone an email, write that. And when you write it, you're going to write it differently than it's on that paper.
Every single time.
Yeah. It will be different. And you will find, oh, you know, this person is this thing, this person likes this, whatever. You'll find little ways to change it so that you are adding, you know, you mentioned being genuine. You add at least a little bit of elbow grease into that to at least make you feel better, even if you are writing the same thing, which seems unlikely to happen. At least you will be putting in some elbow grease and at least making yourself feel better that you flagellated yourself and wrote out.
If that's important to you, I would say do a little head work and decide how important it is to feel like you want to do everything the hard way. You know, you know what I mean?
He mentions the word genuine once, and
listen, you need to figure out a way to be genuine in a repeating basis. Yeah. If where you want to take this is beyond where you're doing now, again, you writing those emails, those were getting to know you emails. Those were early arriver. You will always be special because, you know, this was the early days of email when anybody could email Stephen King and he'd write you back 300 words because email was so rad at the time. Mm. Right. Like that's what they get. Those people deserve that. Now you're talking to a larger audience. And again, this is these are those next level problems is how do I make sure that my workflow is protected and my connection with the audience is healthy. Just because one affects the other. And you will put out worse work if you don't like your audience, and you will not know where to go because ultimately your audience is what tells you where to go and when.
Well, and so Now's a really good time for you to just say who it is that hates their audience. Just give their name out real quick, just so everyone can hear.
I'll not say it. It's not Leo. Leo's got the opposite problem. Leo doesn't know his audience enough. So for those speculating in the chat.
So David finishes off his email on the subject of Patreon. I'm surprised you guys didn't hit him on this. I've yet to launch a Patreon page for my project, but I'm super intrigued on how it might let me centralize my thinking energy to all paying subscribers in a way that is much less one-to-one compared to responding to each donator individually. And I think that's really strong because, you know, Patreon A does have an immediate like here, thank you message space that you can fill out. But it also gives you it gives you a reason once a month to email everybody something new one time and say these are all the things that I've done, you know, all of your help means a lot, we're growing this way, that way, the other. That is a system in place that you can customize a lot, especially to deal with this.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say that you have to buy into the Patreon system, just have some system, because before there was Patreon, I had a vague intuition. This is going back to the year 2000. In the year 2000, Brian Brushwood did one of his first four-walled shows. In the entertainment business, four-walling a show means you rent out a venue, you handle your own marketing and promotion, you charge whatever you're charging at the door, and you either come out ahead or behind. Mm-hmm. So I did three nights at the Hideout Theater in Austin, Texas, right on 8th Street. And from that, there were people who came and saw the show and they were like, oh, we would like you to do this other show. And it ended up being, you know, really kind of the launch of a lot of special things. But even then I understood that I am there in the same room with some number of people and I need some connective thread that keeps us in touch going into the future. And so starting with that four-walled show 18 years ago, I started giving away free copies of my book. I'm using air quotes around the book, Cheese Con Swindles and Tricks, 57 Ways to Scam a Free Drink.
Because in that day, it was a sandwich.
I mean, it might as well have been. You know, they cost me 48 cents each to print and center staple and make. But because it was book, I was like, hey, I'm going to give away, sign up for the giveaway or whatever. And for the first 4 or 5 years, I just collected all these emails. And before I knew it, I had 35,000 emails because you connect with a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. And there are some people who almost 20 years later express, I was at so-and-so college. You came to my show. I've followed you ever since. And again, this is that strange one-way friendship, right? Where it's, it's like, I, you know, he doesn't bother to write me what's going on with his life, but he enjoys it. Just the way I have a fabulous one-way friendship with Dan Harmon. I deeply love listening to Harmontown and his honesty and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't expect that I can give him a phone call and capture his time in real time. So
that college student now is Walt Disney.
So no, I think that's a good idea, because I was about to suggest, like, hey, you have these people's email addresses. Go make a free MailChimp account. You now have a monthly thank you newsletter. And if you run it through MailChimp, they can turn it off and it won't hurt your feelings. And you still get the PayPal things that come in, and you
exactly
manually add them if you want. And that is if you don't want to get into the Patreon system.
I think that's exactly my point is, whether it's Patreon, whether it's whatever, like maintain that thread and make it as strong as possible. Email is the strongest way, but if you want to add strength to it, you know, I when we send out a big fat, as a matter of fact, you know, tonight, I'm going to write a very, very important email. Mm-hmm. And I am aware that despite the fact that we have 130,000 people on our email list, there's only going to be maybe 15,000 people will open it. So it's very important that there's that connective tissue of some number of them will also be following me on Twitter. Some number of them will also be involved on Facebook and so on. And so the point is, if not Patreon, then at least some way to maintain the connection between you and the people that you're reaching out to.
Yeah. So I hope this helped, David. You know, I'm glad to hear that the channel is doing really well. I hope it's less than a year before we hear back from you.
Yeah, man. Congratulations. And I think we glossed over how much progress you made, but that is awesome.
That's huge, man. You're halfway to that beautiful silver play button, which just got redesigned. Congratulations. Yeah. You're going to get the pretty one.
Do you guys have any after picks or after things picks?
I do. Yeah. You know,
you sound enthused.
rest in peace, Andrew Main. I'm sorry he's dead, but, Looking Glass was a great book. If he ever came back from the dead, I would love to chat with him about how good Looking Glass is. And the Theo Cray Naturalist series, I think is his best work that he's done. Just wrapped that one up. I really, really enjoyed it.
Did you get that on the Audible?
I did.
Audiobook.
I did.
Is it the same people as the first one, or is it a different narrator?
No, sounded like the same narrator. It's always interesting to hear somebody who sounds like a white person make the tactical decision of exactly how ethnic to portray various characters in situations. And I think they do a generally good job on this one.
And it's always hard. It is narrating Andrew's books and doing ebook or audiobook narration in general. Man, you realize how important it is to differentiate characters and the limitations for your impressions. Of, like, how far you can go with, like, women's voices and men's voices and voices of
different, you know, ethnicities, like, and
and that's before you even get to how it's written.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if it's like, you know, oye vato, Hector said,
it's like how much oomph do you want to give that performance there?
Is it being disrespectful if you're not saying it in a way that would be represented there on the page? Like,
exactly.
It's tough.
Justin, you got a pick?
Man, do I have another?
I can give you a few minutes and talk about mine.
Yeah, go. Give me.
Is it a Quiet Place? Because I'm hoping it'll be a Quiet Place.
No, did you go see A Quiet Place?
I did.
Did you like it?
I loved it.
It's great. I want to show everybody this image. I want to share a very special image of something that happened. When was this?
Hey,
the 15th?
Hey, look at that.
I finished out the Duolingo.
He's Japanese now.
Japanese course.
Oh, wow.
And they've like updated Duolingo. So instead of like having, it used to be you would have like these little reception signals on each lesson, each module here. Now they have this thing called crowns where you take the lessons over and over again and you earn, you count up on crowns, I guess. And it seems like as you do that, they get a little more difficult and they start adding in more kanji, which I think is very helpful because I reached the end of this and I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do again. This is good, but it didn't get me all the way. And if this was working the way it seems to be working, which is now integrating more kanji and more difficult characters into existing existing vocabulary sets, I think that will keep me trying to keep my streak up more, because I was this close to being like, I think I'm done. I don't know what more I can get out of it,
right,
if this is the limit, because it's a new course. But this, I think, is a really good change. So if you're interested in learning a language, I really recommend Duolingo.
Awesome.
Yeah.
My pick is Eero, E-E-R-O. It's one of these wireless routers that really easy to set up. They set up a little couple base stations around your house and apartment. But I have really, really liked it, mostly because I haven't thought about it except for some of the cool things that they have. Like their app will basically just give you the constantly running speed test of what the internet is. So it's like, we've had some funky internet troubles, and so instead of me going to speedtest.net or whatever and running that, I can just kind of get a good a nice, well laid out snapshot that shows how well it's connected to everything, and get a good idea, a lot of peace of mind, and the fact that now everything in a world where, you know, so much is interconnected with, you know, Wi-Fi capabilities, the fact that there is just one always stable, super fast connection over all of my house or apartment, which is not gigantic, is huge, because we live in a brick building where Wi-Fi signal gets knocked down, and we used to have two different routers that we would connect to. Now everything for like Sonos and printing and stuff like that, super helpful.
So how many of these little things do you have hooked up to cover your apartment?
Got the one that is right by the source. Mm-hmm. We got one here in our studio and then one in the kitchen. So we have a base station and two other ones. We could probably get away with just having one, but we wanted to to make sure that everything was ASAP fast.
So the nice thing is that having that monitoring, that's one of those things that you don't often think about. And what I did not realize with our main, because we have a upstairs router and a downstairs router, the downstairs router, nothing had changed about it, but it was just getting worse and worse and worse. We went from 60 megabits to 10 megabits to 1 megabit. And then finally, a little bit of investigation, it just turns out that the neighborhood we're in, whatever channel, Wi-Fi channel it was on, channel 7 was crowded. Getting super crowded and popular, and then switching it, all of a sudden everything fixed. But like, that's the kind of thing that you would prefer to have a service that would, you know, kind of let you know about that, that growing challenge, in real time.
There's also like a parental stuff that we don't have to really deal with, but, you can shut off the internet to various different devices. You can just say you don't get internet anymore.
So like, good night, kids. It's time to go to bed.
You basically say, yeah, you're in trouble, and we're not going to recognize your phone on the Wi-Fi for another hour.
Yeah.
Well, and because this says like a mobile app, and I think a really big feature is like sharing your password. You just like,
oh, yeah.
You can hit a button to send people your Wi-Fi name and password and stuff, which is like, That's always the, like a dance that you have to do when you go to someone's house. Is like, oh, I want to ask for the password? Because then I got to spell it, and he's got to get a piece of paper, and I got to find virus.
It also promotes stronger passwords.
Correct. It allows you to, because right now the temptation is to always make sure all your passwords are easy to speak out loud and all that stuff.
But yeah, stronger passwords is really helpful, and It's one thing when you have, you know, oh, we've got it written down. And but like when you can do it on your phone and everybody's got their phone and you can, I assume, just text it to somebody, like that saves a lot of time. And it really is just like an awkward dance. Otherwise,
it's good. And it's a little, I mean, obviously it's a little, you know, more expensive than you would spend on another, you know, wireless router, but, it's not crazy.
It's not crazy for like a nice router.
Yeah. It's $400 for what I have. So a base station and two
extenders,
little, outlet things.
Very cool. Alrighty. Well, thank you, David, for sending that letter. Thank you, everybody, for listening and supporting us at patreon.com/weirdthings. Brian and Justin, thank you guys.
Yeah.
You thank you.
It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.